The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to John. Glory to you, O Lord.
On the first day of the week, Mary of Magdala came to the tomb early in the morning while it was still dark and saw the stone removed from the tomb. So she ran and went to Simon Peter and to the other disciple whom Jesus loved and told them, "They have taken the Lord from the tomb, and we don't know where they put him." So Peter and the other disciple went out and came to the tomb. They both ran, but the other disciple ran faster than Peter and arrived at the tomb first. He bent down and saw the burial cloths there, but did not go in. When Simon Peter arrived after him, he went into the tomb and saw the burial cloths there and the cloth that had covered his head, not with the burial cloths, but rolled up in a separate place. Then the other disciple also went in, the one who had arrived at the tomb first, and he saw and believed. For they did not yet understand the scripture that he had to rise from the dead.
The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ.
Okay, that was my best breathless rendition of the Gospel account, the proclamation. And I think, you know, it's quite easy to see that something is different, yeah? I mean, and it's not just the fact that many of the prayers of the Mass today are accompanied by song or given in song. This is the least, I think, we can do to celebrate the extraordinary event that is the resurrection of Jesus. We have to kind of sit in that and drill down on that a little bit and ask all the questions about the resurrection. But yeah, this is a mighty, powerful event. You know, my first reaction to observing the resurrection and to having to prepare to preach about the resurrection in the 4 hours I had since last night into this morning was, okay, God has blown a hole in the cosmos. Can you feel that? In the resurrection of Jesus, God has blown a hole in the cosmos. Okay? No, it doesn't work. Okay, so let's think of a different way to do this. Okay, depending on your generation, let's say, you might have experience, at least in film or in story, with some images of resurrection power. Okay, I'm thinking of The Matrix. Has anybody seen The Matrix? I mean, Keanu's still playing that role, isn't he? I mean, it's like, he was a little slower in whatever Matrix was just re-released, but yeah, The Matrix, Neo, right? Do you remember this? Nobody's got following. Okay, it's going to be one of those days. That's great. Okay, yeah, so Matrix, right? Neo goes to his death. He goes to his death, and he rises from the dead so that he is then free to be about the good work of rolling back the evil forces, right, as they exist in real life. Okay, this is something similar. When you see Neo having gone to his death and then seeing him rise from the dead, that experience is something like the experience that we see Jesus rising from the dead. Okay, that one didn't work that way. Okay, how about Harry Potter? Okay, no comment on the series, okay? Except that, if you read through it, what is it, the Deathly Hallows? I'm not exactly of that generation either, okay? So if you watch, and you can watch the movies as well, the experience of Harry, who has borne the curse of Voldemort, he's borne the mark of Voldemort in his body, goes also to his self-sacrificial death. Right, and you go, okay, we lose hope. Well, what now? There's no protagonist. There's no hero. He's gone to his death. As good as we might think that is an act. But when he rises from the dead, without any longer the mark of Voldemort, he has destroyed the power of Voldemort. And when he snaps his wand, we recognize that the power, the dark power, the dark forces under which humanity had to operate has been broken. So that experience of relief, of joy, the rest, of the dark clouds that are lifted and the sun breaking in, this is very similar to our experience of the resurrection, what our experience of the resurrection is, okay? God has blown a hole in the cosmos. This is it, okay? God has blown a hole in the cosmos, okay? Now, when I say that, I think, okay, well, we think we understand the way the world, the way that it is. But the reason why we do this and we talk about the laws of nature and the rest is because we want to manipulate the world to do what we want it to do. Want to manipulate creation to give us everything that we want. Okay, this is not exactly the stewardship project that God entrusts to us, right? But we say, oh, the laws of nature and the way, this is just the way things are. Anyone said that to you recently? Yeah, you want to punch them in the face? Yeah, okay. No, we don't want to, we want to love them into new life, right? Because it's love that's going to transform every situation. But here we say, this is just the way things are. No, that's the way we've made things to be. We want to manipulate the thing. And then God comes and blows a hole in that. He says, here are your plans. They're too small. They're too small. Here are your dreams. They're too small. Even when we think about world peace, we just think about, okay, how are we going to divide up the pie, okay? So, like, let's just give that those guys that thing and that guy's that thing or whatever. And it is never going to work. Because world peace is only going to come about by our worship of the true and living God and our living out his suffering love, the same love that caused him to take the cross and die the shameful death of crucifixion, is the same love that gives him new life on the other side of death and allows us then to participate in that new world that he has opened up. Okay? Now, what's happening is he's not blowing a hole in the cosmos, actually. He is holding the cosmos together. He's renewing the cosmos. He's renewing the created world. And he's holding it together. Okay, but before we get to that point, I know this one's going to be a long one. Is it going to be a long one? Maybe, I don't know. They're all long ones. Okay, I give up on myself. Okay, this is it. There's a lot. I should have asked. I should have started by asking whether or not we believe that the resurrection happened. Okay, did Jesus Christ rise bodily from the dead? Yeah? Now, we say yes. And we should hold to it with faith. Not faith in terms of the, you know, this kind of enlightenment and post-enlightenment project of, I believe again, you know, it's out in the clouds somewhere, I believe, and whatever. But then when it's put to the test, we're like, oh, yeah, okay, don't hold a gun to my head, right? It's not, I don't want to go down that road. No, we believe with the conviction of faith, we hold on to the resurrection of the Lord. In fact, we wager everything on the resurrection of the Lord. St. Paul said, if he is not raised from the dead, then we are still in our sin. Our preaching also is in vain. Right? Bishop Barron has said recently, if Jesus is not risen from the dead, then the Pope, all the bishops, priests, and the rest should leave their jobs and go and get decent work, honest work. That's absolutely true. And if he's not risen from the dead, you shouldn't be here. You shouldn't be here because the whole thing is a complete nonsense. If Jesus did not rise from the dead. And they all knew that, okay? There's plenty of evidence that points to the resurrection of Jesus. If you're interested in, say, more of the totality of the evidence, then send me a note, okay? And if you're holding in there as like, hanging in there as like, okay, I believe, but I'm not sure, I'm this way and that way, don't do that, okay? Do not waste your energy, do not waste your life. We have much more important things to do as Christians than to go back and forth between faith and disbelief about the resurrection of Jesus. It's almost certain historical fact. Okay? It's almost certain historical fact. Even down to the fact that you look at Jesus, he is proclaimed by his disciples as King of the Jews. After his shameful death, after his shameful execution by the enemies of the Jews. No, any would-be Messiah who is executed by the enemies of Judaism, of Israel, is himself only a would-be Messiah. He's a failed Messiah. The reason why they can proclaim Jesus as the Messiah, as the King of the Jews and then Lord of all nations, after his shameful death, is because he rose from the dead. And that we might think, oh, it's a credulous claim. It's a credulous claim until each of the, say, well, 10 of the apostles, because of course Judas betrays him, and John dies a natural death on the island of Patmos, right? But 10 of the apostles scattered afar throughout the world, each goes to his death proclaiming that very message, claiming that truth, okay? You cannot get 10 people to agree on a story in a court of law, right? It won't happen if they've created the thing. And we're talking about giving their entire life for what? For a sham? No, they gave their life for the risen Lord. And they went out not only in proclamation the fact of the resurrection, but what the resurrection caused to be the case. Okay, we see here also, let me just point to a couple more things. This story is crazy, the gospel story. If this story were written even a few years after the resurrection, right? If this story were made up out of whole cloth around the time of Jesus, no one would write the story this way. Mary Magdala, a woman of some disrepute, right? So, a woman who had her own struggles and the rest, but a woman at all giving testimony to the first evidence of the resurrection, you wouldn't write the story that way. It wouldn't happen because, of course, women's testimony was inadmissible. It didn't matter what they saw or believed. You needed the testimony of the men. So if this story were created out of whole cloth, you would have men being the witnesses of the empty tomb, the first witnesses of the empty tomb. Not Mary of Magdala. Oh, she's a hysterical woman. Do you know what does it matter? You know, that's not it, okay? And what about the cloths? The reason why they go running is because they think that there's been a burglary. They think that the body has been stolen. But the body's been stolen, but the cloths are left behind. Yeah, and also I say in a remarkable way, the reason why it gets mentioned is really for one reason. It's because we have the cloths. It's because we have the cloths, and they have the imprint of the crucified and risen Lord, which is some evidence, isn't it? In our scientific age, we always want evidence, you know. But we got look at St. Thomas when he sees Jesus and he wants to touch, but actually he doesn't. Because evidence is not all there is. We have knowledge that goes beyond the evidence. We have faith that goes beyond the evidence. Okay, so what's going on? Okay, Jesus rose from the dead. Okay, we're all agreed. I wanted to give you the strength of your convictions there. Okay, what is happening in the resurrection of Jesus? God is holding the cosmos together. He's holding and bringing together heaven and earth. Now, this shouldn't surprise us because the human project is the heaven and earth project. If we look at creation, and I won't go through, you know, all of the scriptures, okay? We won't do that today. We did some of that last night, okay? We look at the scriptures, we look at Genesis, we look at the vocation of man. It's twofold. It's to bring earth to heaven, it's to bring heaven to earth. Sounds strange? You are a strange creature. Okay, that's why that sounds strange, because you're a strange creature. You are a heaven-to-earth creature. You're an earth-to-heaven creature. So you're not just earth. You're not just heaven. You are heaven and earth, but you're not simply a static reality, okay? You're this column A, that's column B, you're column C. No, you are the column C that's supposed to hold together A and B. You're supposed to hold together God's realm, his sphere, and the human realm, earth. And only by holding it together can we bring full flourishing to God's creation. That's the vocation of man. But something goes wrong. What goes wrong? We no longer center ourselves on God. This is the story of the scriptures, but it may well be the story of our lives, which makes it doubly important, I think, to preach today. Yeah, the story of the scriptures, the story of our lives, is that we come out of God-centeredness, and we focus our entire life on something other than the true and living God. And usually, yeah, it's a vain pursuit. Power, money, pleasure, popularity. Okay, take those and then make that your glasses and go out and look at the world. You'll understand everything. Okay, money, power, pleasure, popularity, and more. People's lives center on those things when they don't center on the true and living God. And when our lives center on those things instead of the true and living God, right, when we commit acts of idolatry, we then bring injustice into the world. So we're disrupted in our relationship with God, and that causes great disruption in the world. Again, this is clear, right? Walk out the door, you're going to see it. There's disruption in the world. You will say to yourself, things are not as they should be. Things are not as they should be. That's absolutely right. But Jesus, in his death and resurrection, is holding the cosmos together so that things can be as they should be. So he wants to affect God's reality, God's new creation, not now of idolatry and injustice, but of holiness and justice, of right relationship with God that brings about a new and creative justice in the world, right relationships with each other. What else do we want? Right? This is the deepest desire of our heart because this is what we're made for. And in Jesus, in his death and resurrection, he's making it again possible for us. He is the eternal high priest. Jesus brought earth to heaven. Right? The offering of his entire life, driven by self-giving love, he turns over to God. Right? This is the act of perfect praise in which here at the altar, we offer ourselves through and with and in Jesus. So we're taking our flesh, we're taking our body, and we're giving it over to God through and with and in Jesus. We're summing up creation's praise, everything that's entrusted to us, everything over which we have dominion and are exercising God's stewardship, we bring together into our hearts and we offer to God, the Almighty Father, through and with and in the sacrifice of his dearly beloved Son. That's how we exercise our priesthood. And it's animated and sustained by the risen life of Christ, by his power, the power of heaven, and the breath of his Spirit at work in us and working through us. We can offer ourselves whole and entire to God. And then having offered ourselves to God whole and entire, right? So think about it, right? Instead of all the distractions, instead of the things that get us off kilter and have us live off center, We push through that. Jesus breaks the bonds of the powers. Jesus puts our enemies to shame. He defeats the idols so that we can worship God. And we worship him in the power of his Spirit. Now, worshiping him, we are purified, properly purified, to be the creatures that God intends us to be, so that him breathing his life into us, sustaining us, nourishing us, with his own life of love, become flesh for us here at the altar, in the Eucharist, receiving the gift of his own precious life, we can embody his rule for the corner of creation that he entrusts to our care. We are kings. We are kings, my friends. Right? Okay, there's not as much excitement out there as in here. Okay, this has to be spirit-driven today, right? Because I got nothing else right now. We don't know that Jesus is all we need until Jesus is all we have. Okay? And he is now here and now breathing his life into us so that we can live that great reality. We can not only say be witnesses of his death and resurrection that feels like that God has torn a hole in the cosmos, but really he's just holding things together and piecing them back together. We can participate in that reality because it's not just Jesus' achievement. It's an achievement that now needs to be implemented. And it's ours, my friends, to implement it in all holiness and justice. As we worship here and give God the praise, give him the glory, nothing else. Give God the glory. And so be freed to pour yourselves out in his service. This is the great story of Easter. This is our going concern, the renewal of humanity and the power that he now breathes into us in order to bring that project to its proper completion.